deliberate about that. He's a former part of the chapter of the NUJ at the Guardian, and he's a member of the National Union of Journalists Executive, and I think he's perhaps best known for being one of the very few journalists who continue to defend the miners all the way through their long struggle in 84, 85, and afterwards, all the way up until the battle for Tower Colliery, which unfortunately has just been lost this week. Seamus Mill.
Thanks very much, Paul. Just before I want to start addressing really the questions that we're meeting to discuss tonight, I just wanted to say something about this leaflet that's been circulated today, because I know that some people, the people who've signed this, are unhappy about some of the things to do with this meeting, and I just wanted to clarify what, from our point of view, this meeting and the statement that went with it are really about. The statement and the meeting are what you see and what you get. The statement is just a group of people who drafted something, hammered it out, and agreed a form of words, and they are the people who called this meeting. It isn't an organisation yet, it's just an attempt to get something going, and we would like everybody, including the people who signed this statement, the one on the yellow paper, to participate in the organisation that we hope will come out of this meeting. It's a non-sectarian initiative. It doesn't have anything to do with organisation, either with the ANL or the ARA, although I should say for myself that I'm an original signatory of the ARA and a strong supporter of it. It's not hostile to either organisation. I am one of the people, I'm sure there are other people here who have been to some extent dismayed by the divisions within the anti-racist and anti-fascist movement, and would like to see those overcome, and I hope this meeting will make some initiative towards that. Now, there's been a lot of water under the bridge politically since the last time when fascists were making waves in Britain, making waves in London, making some progress on the march on the streets in the late 70s. And I must say, I've been alarmed to hear some of the things from people on the left and among liberals people who would have understood arguments and the arguments that we're making in our statement we're making here tonight 10 or 15 years ago. A lot of those things have been forgotten, and I think we need to examine the basic arguments about platforms for fascists, about how they should be treated in the media. And I think there's four basic arguments that I've heard over and over again against the case we make very briefly in our statement that there should be no platform for fascist propaganda in the media. Now, the first argument is the basic liberal free speech argument. This is the argument that says, I abhor everything the fascists stand for, but I defend their right to the death to say it. Now, I think what we must ask to the people to who say that and who make that kind of statement is, whose death exactly are we talking about? Are we talking about yours, or are we talking about the victims of fascist and racist attacks every day on the streets of our city? Are we talking about the newspaper pundits who pontificate about fascism and what it means today, post-fascism, or whatever they like to call it? Or are we talking about people like Rowan Adams, Roy Dougal, Stephen Lawrence, and Orville Blair, who have paid personally with their lives for the propagation of fascist violence in Britain today? They are the people, I think, the victims of fascism, the victims of racism, who we should be listening to, and that's what they're saying. The second related argument that is made against our case is that the best way to expose fascists and to expose what they stand for is to give them a platform. Let them make their case and people will see how revolting and absurd they are. Now, if the interviewers who interviewed them on television and not on the radio were a bit more up to the job and actually knew how to counter their arguments, I could maybe stomach this case a little bit better. But I think it's really hopelessly naive to imagine that the kind of cancerous demagogy that is fascism is susceptible to rational argument. In fact, it's an insult and an attack on the freedom of millions of our fellow citizens, and the freedom for fascists to incite fear and violence against those people is an insult and undermining their basic civil and human rights. So we're not complaining about genuine reporting. We're not saying people shouldn't write about what's going on in the East End of London or in other areas where fascists are active. But what we're saying is you cannot treat these people like an ordinary political party. We have to draw a line beyond which we say you cannot go. If any journalist or any newspaper editor was faced with an article which, or an interview by someone who said, did 6 million really die, denying the Holocaust, they wouldn't print it. We know they wouldn't print it. So why should they be printing other arguments of a similar nature made by these fascists? A third argument that is sometimes made, and I think it makes a strong appeal to some people on the left, is that if we deny the BNP a platform, we are playing into the hands of those who have forced through the broadcasting ban against Sinn Féin and other Irish organisations in the north of Ireland. And I think the truth about this is a complete red herring. There is not the slightest connection between these two things. There is not the slightest likelihood that if we were successful in denying a platform to fascists in the media, that would affect in one way or another what the British government does in relation to the broadcasting ban or the right of British people and Irish people to hear these organisations make their case. The crisis in North of Ireland is about deep-seated national struggles and grievances, about the relation between nationalities and states. It has nothing whatever to do with a movement for a racist authoritarian state based on demented race theories and a determination to smash working class institutions. Now, the fourth argument, which we've heard, and some other speakers have already mentioned this, is that these people are not really fascists. They're post-fascists. They're semi-fascists. They're neo-fascists. Maybe they're not fascists at all. Some people say they're racist populists. As far as I'm concerned, if it looks like a duck, it flies like a duck, it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. These people are fascists. They subscribe to the full range of Nazi and fascist politics. They admit it quite openly. I don't know why people can't even see what they're saying. They say it themselves. We're fascists. We're racist. We're 100% Nazi. Now, it's perfectly true they're small organisations, but they are fanning the flames. They're fanning the flames of racist violence on our streets, and they are presenting themselves in an electoral, respectable way as part of the tactic which has always been used by fascists. Somebody wrote in the paper the other day, oh, these are not fascist organisations. These are electoral organisations. Fascist organisations are military organisations. Completely absurd argument. In the 1920s and 1930s, who were the most successful electoral parties in Europe? Fascist parties, Nazi parties. That's how they came, with a two-pronged strategy. Using democratic institutions, and at the same time, out on the streets, fighting, kicking people's heads in, asserting their authority in a violent way. And what is going on at the moment is throughout Europe, and now we're beginning to get it in Britain as well, is an attempt by these organisations to gain respectability and be treated like an ordinary political party, and in so doing they are pushing the mainstream right-wing parties further and further to the right and corroding the entire political system. So I think people in the media have a special responsibility, as other people have said tonight. We can't pretend that these reports have no effect in inflaming the situation that we face today. In fact, our demands are not particularly radical demands. There have been bans on fascists throughout Western Europe. The trade unions, the Transport and General Workers Union, the RMT, they're calling for bans on the BNP. Our demands actually are less radical than that. We're saying we do not accept and we will not accept a platform for fascist propaganda in the media. It's a reasonable demand. It's a sensible demand. Our job is to apply the maximum pressure in every way across the board to isolate and destroy this malignancy in our society.